Hello, this is Down the Back of the Seats. I'm Ellen, cinema manager at Campbelltown Picture House.
And I'm Alistair, a film and theatre maker based in the Isle of Mull.
And Alistair, what is this podcast about?
This podcast explores what happens when public spaces and the public meet. What's left behind? What's been found that's unexpected? What stories are there to tell? So it's tales from behind the scenes at the cinema, theatre, concert hall, wherever people meet, linger, and leave things. Or bits.
Lovely. We've got another guest this week. We are speaking to Alex, who works at a chain of cinemas, which will remain nameless, although it's quite easy to figure out who he is and where he works, mainly because I said all of those information in the last episode. Sorry, Alex. And we're going to talk to Alex about all sorts of things, but audience behaviours, controversial films again we'll bring up with him, and just his life in cinema.
We are very happy to welcome Alex. Alex, could you give us a little bit about yourself and
who I am, yeah.
And who you are?
Thanks for having me, first of all. I'm really glad to be here. My name's Alex. I currently manage a multiplex cinema in the centre of London. I've been in the industry for 15 years or so. You know, I've managed cinemas in Brighton, which is obviously, Ellen, where we know each other from. We work together down there. Before that as well, I worked in cinemas back home, which is in Swansea, South Wales. And I started off actually as a projectionist way back in the day. So I went from projectionist all the way to general manager in the space of 15 years.
This was 35 millimeter projection back in our day when we started.
It was. We say back in the day. It wasn't that long ago.
It was like 15 years ago.
But it does, you know, considering what projection is like today, it does feel like a long time ago. But yeah, we had 12 screens, all 35 mil. Really loved that job, actually. It was a surprise. I didn't really intend on going into cinema. It just kind of happened. And here I am today, still there, 15 years later, but obviously in a different capacity.
We're quite lucky, I think, in that we spanned the 35 mil into digital age. I mean, there's people starting in cinema now that would have nothing to do with 35 mil, and people that finished just before we started that would have nothing to do with digital.
I feel
very lucky.
Same as well. Privileged, really, to have worked in that medium. And a lot of the people that we hire today, obviously they're quite young, kind of, you know, late teens, early 20s. They have no idea what 35 millimeter is or was, you know, just because they were 3 years old when that all finished. And they've kind of grown up in the digital era, and they just don't really know what that history is. We do play some films currently at the cinema I work at, so they do get exposed to it a little bit.
You've got 70 at your cinema, haven't
yeah,
you?
We do.
I was going to ask about 70, yeah.
Yeah, we've just done a big long run of Oppenheimer, which was very successful for us. And, you know, looks stunning. It's a great film anyway, but it looks amazing on that format. And, you know, we do try to keep it going, you know, as much as we can, because people do travel to watch films on that format. And particularly when you've got filmmakers like Nolan who champion that sort of thing, you know, we really like to be able to offer that.
You're a Nolan stan. I get messages from Alex after every episode saying, why do you hate Christopher Nolan so much?
It's just not fun.
But it's Alistair that doesn't like Christopher Nolan.
I mean, granted, I didn't like Tenet, but I like all the others.
I think what I liked about Tenet was that, sorry, the listeners that are bored of the Christopher Nolan chat, but what I liked about Tenet...
It will never go away.
No, he's the cinematic clinker. No. Tenet treated his audience with such intelligence. I thought that was brilliant. You said, "No, you're a clever audience. You'll work this out." And I thought that was absolutely beautiful. I thought great respect for him on that front. But it's just I'd like a little bit more humanity in things, and you know, not the odd fart gag, but just something, you know, just a little bit more. And apparently, there's a rumor of all the rumors around Bond stuff that, you know, he's going to direct two Bond movies back to back or something like that. And it's like, that could be. Will that be fun? I don't know.
Yeah, Bond needs to be fun again.
Oh, God, aye.
It does. It got so dour the last few films.
Fun, but not sexist.
Yes, of course.
We find the middle ground between, because that's a lot of people bemoaning the fact that he's not a massive horny sexist anymore. Yeah. Misogynist. Yeah. But that's not where the fun is.
My theory for Bond is that they're going to go period.
Yeah.
Especially because of what happened at the end of the last film. No spoilers here. But I think it's going to go back to kind of the 60s era sort of espionage. That would be great, I think.
Yeah. If it's Henry Cavill as well, he did Man Runkle like that as well, and that worked very well. So,
Yeah. Maybe that's where they'll go.
So when you're working with 70 mil, is it a much greater weight to be dealing with as well, because it's twice the size of 35 mil?
Yeah, it is. It's double the weight, obviously, and also Oppenheimer is particularly weighty. It's 3 hours. The print is enormous. Thankfully, I didn't have to do any of the heavy lifting. I've got a projectionist team to do that. But yeah, you know, it's so much more. You can see why digital became prominent, because it's just so much more convenient. I remember back in the day when I was a projectionist, and every Thursday night it would be the screen switchovers. So, you know, you need to move the prints from screen one down to screen four or whatever. And you'd spend a good an hour or so lifting these really heavy prints and, you know, move it, literally just walking them from projection room to projection room, utterly terrified that you might drop it at any point. Never did, thankfully. I almost dropped Sex and the City 2 once, but that may have been subconsciously.
Is that deliberate?
Yeah. Can I ask, what happens to prints when they are past their screening time? Because, you know, is there a way of recycling it, or are they all chopped up into individual frames for sale, for novelty things? What happens to them?
Well, as far as our kind of responsibility, so the film ends its run with us. Then we have to what we call break it down. So you break it down back into its original reels that it appeared in. And then we just send it back to the distributor. And I guess it's up to them what they do with it, whether they keep it, for archive reasons or for rest cinemas, perhaps.
Yeah, because 70 mil, the last thing I saw in 70 mil was 2001 in Edinburgh, in the film house, when it was re-released about 8 years ago or something like that. I remember sitting there, just like, it's a film I know intimately, it's one of my all-time favourite films. I just remember being so happy I just fell asleep. One of the things that I think really interesting about the change to DCP is that, as a filmmaker, I can now have my films shown in cinema with a great amount of ease. So there's a program called DCP-O-Matic, which Ellen introduced me to, which is very simple. You just drop a clip or a film into it, and it renders it down into a DCP format, which is all the information that you want for your screening, which is absolutely fantastic. So it's in many ways, DCP has democratized screening technology.
Yeah, it's so much easier as well for distributors. You know, you can send it via satellite as well. You don't even need to send hard drives, really. That depends on bandwidth and so on, of course. But you know, it has kind of paved the way for a lot more older films to be reintroduced to screenings, because, you know, especially after the pandemic, obviously we weren't screening many new films because they just weren't being released by the distributors. So we kind of filled our programming with older films and things that people wanted to come back and watch. And we wouldn't really have probably been able to do that if it wasn't for the DCP technology, you know, because it's just so much easier to manage.
Can I ask you then, what are the differences in running, so Ellen's a small scale community theatre, community cinema in Campbelltown, and you're in the heart of London running how many screens?
The one I run at the moment's got 7 screens, yeah.
So multiplex, what are the differences between those two operations? What's kind of been a real highlight for you of having gone from presumably smaller cinemas like in Brighton out to London and Swansea as well?
Well, for me, I think what I enjoy most really about being a manager is interacting with people. And I mean both customers and staff members as well, yeah. You know. The team that when I used to work down in Brighton, the team we had there was 15 to 20 people, maybe. So a lot of them working part time and so on. The team I've got now is upward of 80 people.
Wow.
You know, that was the biggest shift for me, really, was just managing that amount of people. And obviously it's all relative. The management team and so on is also bigger. So it's not as if I suddenly am personally responsible for all those people, which I kind of am actually when I say it out loud. But it's just the day-to-day interactions with so many people, you know, and with customers as well. You know, I won't get too much into the specifics, but you know, we obviously get a lot of customers through our doors, and I like to be able to interact with as many of them as I can. And, you know, much in the same way that I know Ellen does, you know, I want to kind of try and keep that link and that community feel, even though it's an enormous building with hundreds of people coming to the doors every day. So many of which are tourists, you know, in central London, a lot of the guests that we have are tourists. So they just pop in because they've got 6 hours until left light and they want to watch a film. And, you know, it's all about having meaningful interactions with people, you know, regardless of the size, really. And also just, you know, we've got a restaurant that we have as well, you know, all these different F&B offerings that all require more management and looking after. So I suppose it's just the scale of it, really, because at the end of the day, it's the same thing. We both run cinemas, and we both play films and sell popcorn to people. You know, it's in essence the same thing. It's just in terms of scale, really, is the main difference.
I was very impressed by a cinema I went to when my son and I went to see a concert down in London. He was, I think, 12 at the time. And we went to the concert the day after, and it was superb. And then we had time to kick around before we got the train again back of 11. So we thought, well, what do we do in central London? Well, let's go to the cinema. So we went to Leicester Square. And we didn't go to the big Leicester Square cinema, but we went to one of the ones kind of up the back off of there. Yeah. And we went to see a Spider-Man movie that had come out. And it was so exciting to go to the cinema in London. I was just quite, I don't know why, it just felt different. And what I loved about it was this cinema space that we were in was, I mean, it was screen 6 or something like that. And it was like it was half a room, but the more than half of the room was the screen. And it was just like, oh yes, give me spaces like this where, you know, it's just every conceivable inch of wall space is given over to the screen. And it's completely impractical as a space. There's nothing, it wasn't comfortable, but there was a huge screen. You were inches from it, and it was like, oh my goodness. And I love that with London and cinema. It was just awesome.
London cinemas do have definitely have a different feel.
Enough of this nice stuff about how lovely cinema is. Geese the Dart. tell us some rotten stories, please.
I was looking back through our messenger messages because we have a habit of saying remember and then saying something that has happened to us in the past. I don't know that these are stories, but they were just the ones that really made me laugh. So there was, remember when someone complained we don't play art house and we were literally playing an Icelandic film about sheep?
Yeah, I remember that. That's always been the way, though. You know, you can play the most art house program for 3 weeks in a row, and then you play an extremely mainstream film for 1 week, and everyone complains that you never play art house. You know, you can't win a lot of the time. But you know, as much as we would love to play art house constantly, we do need to make money. You know, and unfortunately. Yeah. Yeah, you know, those films are excellent for their audience and people will come and watch them, but they're not, we need, you know, bums on seats in order to maintain the business and pay all our staff and keep the projectors running. Yeah. I do have a particularly horrible story, actually. Shall I go ahead and say it? It might be too horrible, in fact.
Alistair told a story about somebody fucking a baguette last week, so there's nothing too horrible.
Well, maybe it is. I'll let you decide. So, people... This is a long time ago, so this is way before where I work currently. But customers don't really read signs that you put up a lot of the time. You know, things like out of order or, you know, cash only, things like this. You can put as many signs up, people don't read them or they willfully ignore them. I don't know what the answer is. Anyway, we had one event. This must have been about 10 years ago. We had one particular event. It was really busy in the cinema. And in the toilets upstairs, there was a cubicle that was not only had an out of order sign on it, you know, this toilet is not in use, please do not use, but it also had two layers of hazard tape over the door. So you really, really had to try to get in there, you know, in order to use it. Someone, of course, did get in to use it for whatever reason. And a staff member called me and they said, oh, can you go and check the toilet? It looks like it's kind of blocked and overflowing. So I went upstairs and checked the cubicle, which had been, the tape had been ripped off and someone had barred. And there were plenty of cubicles to choose from. I'm not sure why this particular one was used. Maybe it was just a really busy moment. But there was both vomit and feces in this toilet, which I then had to unblock, essentially using, you know, my gloved hands. I can just see the other faces. That is really
God, you poor thing.
Yeah, I'm having flashbacks of similar, the unblocking of the toilit is a rite of passage.
And I was doing it, and the staff member came in, and they were like, "Oh, I can't believe you do it." And I was like, never let it be said that the manager doesn't get involved with, you know, the cleaning of the toilet.
Yeah.
That meant that's God itself, you know, into my brain.
I end up doing all of the grotty, those really grotty dogs jobs like that, because I feel really bad asking anybody else to do it, because it's just horrible. And also one of my staff members is terrified of vomit. So there's no chance you do it.
Talking of vomit, I've got another story. So,
oh, yes, please.
This was even further back when I was working for a different company, but we had CCTV cameras obviously all over the building, and a staff member called on the radio and they said, oh, there's a child running through the foyer barefoot.
Oh.
We were like, oh, unusual. So we opened up the camera to see what was going on, and he just stopped in the middle of the foyer and projectile vomited like nothing I have ever seen in my entire life. So the poor thing was obviously running to get to a bathroom.
Oh, we think.
I'm not sure why he was barefoot, but he just stopped and then just exploded all over the foyer.
Oh, we darling.
Oh my God, I've just remembered a vomit thing from another cinema that I was in. There's somebody came over, a lady came over and said, oh, the sick over here, and she was sort of with the child that had just been sick, so I assumed that she was his grandmother, so I kind of handed her some cleaning stuff, and I was helping as well, and she kind of was looking at me a bit weird, but we were both sort of cleaning up this sick, and then she we kind of finished, and I said, oh, is he okay? And she said, oh, he's nothing to do with me. So I just forced this woman to help me clear up the sick of another person's child. And she'd very politely just kind of gone along with it.
Did you use the bodily fluid pack?
I used cat litter.
Oh, really? Okay.
This was in a different country where bodily fluids were dealt with cat litter and sawdust.
We currently have, you know, bodily fluid cleaning packs, which contain this really strange sort of absorbent sand that you pour on.
And it goes like gel. Vomit. It's horrible.
Yeah, and then it does make it easy to clean, though. You can just sweep it up afterwards. Yeah.
Well, that's very good.
Yeah, but that's always on standby.
We haven't had a vom incident for ages now, I think about it. We've got through the whole school holidays without anyone vomming in the cinema.
You probably get one soon now that you've
I know. It. I've said it now. There'll be a big vom incident.
from the top floor onto the over the balcony.
Yeah, over the balcony. Oh God, we've never had a bomb over the balcony thing. Have you got balconies? You haven't got a balcony, have you? At yours?
Not in screen, no.
You had it one of your previous cinemas. Remember the snake?
The snake, yes, I do remember the snake. I think I emailed in about this, didn't I, a few weeks ago. But yeah.
Lovely story. That was so nice.
I just had a fear. I don't mind snakes. I'm not really scared of them like a lot of people are. But I just had this image of us wandering into the office and suddenly the container being empty. And, you know, having to hunt for this huge snake throughout the cinema.
Having to explain to head office that there was a python.
Boa constrictor.
Missing in the cinema.
I'm not sure we got that signed off, did we?
I don't know. I won't call you. No, you must have done. You do everything by the book. I would have said, nah, it's fine. Let's not worry about it. But you would have.
Yeah, that was a great day, wasn't it?
That was so much fun.
Yeah, and that was back when, you know, films were busy all the time. And it was, you know, because obviously cinemas are a bit quieter now than they were back before the pandemic. And that was a great time.
How did you find the summer then with Barbenheimer? Was that a thing for you in central London?
Yes, it was massively a thing. It was our busiest weekend that we've ever had, actually.
Wow.
Yeah, it was really, really crazy.
That's so good to hear.
But it was great, you know. We cinemas needed that, you know. And I have slight concerns that it's a little bit of a lightning in a bottle situation. You know, there's only so much the industry can rely on. Yeah. Big, enormous films for, you know. Well, to be honest, they played well for at least a month for us. Maybe even we're still playing both those films, you know, to audiences as well. They're not just empty auditoriums. It was a big time for us.
The next issue you've got is the writer's strike and the actor's strike as well. Yeah. Do you have any theories on how cinema is going to survive that 2-3 month gap already?
Yeah, I mean, we're seeing a little bit of a break in content at the moment already, but I don't think that's to do with the strikes. I think that'll be maybe in 6-9 months time, you know, when suddenly we're all going to be like, oh, there's no films to play. Yeah. And a bit like I said earlier, we're probably going to have to rely on older content, you know, which makes it easier with VCPs, like I said, to do that. But, you know, hopefully it'll all get resolved fairly soon and you know, it won't cause too much of a problem for the industry.
Yeah, well, we've already seen independent films coming in to plug the gap. And I think Past Lives, the stars of Past Lives have just had dispensation to publicize, to do interviews and things. That's the actor's strike rather than the writer's strike. So I think that we might see a little bit more of that, which would be great for your site, not quite as great for mine, which doesn't really do an awful lot of independent films, although we are playing Past Lives, which is wonderful. So
yeah, it's great. I'm glad that film is doing as well as it is, you know, because it's such a good film. And what we've seen is it's been playing pretty consistently since it opened, because obviously normally it's massive Friday, massive Saturday, drop off after that, you know, continue. But in fact, it's kind of, the audience, I think, is growing for that film.
Wow.
And I think it probably will continue to grow until it inevitably wins a lot of awards early next year. Because it's a fantastic film. But, you know, we've got things like the new Scorsese coming out, which I think particularly for our audience at my site is going to be really, really big. I mean, the film itself is really big as well. It's almost 4 hours if you include all the ads and trailers. So it's a bit of a programming nightmare.
Unacceptable.
How long do you have it for? Because it's an Apple release as well, isn't it? Are they going to...
Yeah, as far as I know, I think it's getting a full theatrical release beforehand. I think Apple know what they've got on their hands, you know, and they want to get as much people to see it on, because as far as I know, Apple TV is one of the lower kind of subscribed platforms. Yeah,
it's good though. I like it.
Yeah, me too. I think it's actually probably my favorite one. I find they tend to have quality over quantity.
Oh, the commissioning's brilliant. Yeah,
and some of the others just, you know, fill their platforms with absolute rubbish in order to get viewers. But anyway, we've got that coming out, which I hope is going to be great, and also Napoleon, which
I'm desperate to see.
Yeah, which I think would be really big for all cinemas, really. I think Ridley Scott has been quite hit and miss recently.
20 years of shite.
But I think, you know, the trailer's great for this one. I think that's Apple as well, actually.
Yes, it is.
I think we'll really see the effect of it in kind of 6 to 9 months' time. Obviously, Dune got moved, Dune Part 2.
Mm. Yeah, it's a shame. Yeah, I was looking forward to getting that out of the way.
It's like a chore.
It's nothing compared to, like, I'm a massive fan of the original one. I don't know if I've mentioned this before, but there's a brilliant meme I've seen based around the original one. I've said this, Ellen, where so if you know the original one by David Lynch, it starts off with the princess narrating in a very special voice, and it's so funny because it sets up, but it's camp, it's high camp, this film. Anyway, someone's done a meme where, because she comes back out of the darkness and says, oh yes, one last thing. the rest of the meme is, oh yes, one last thing. I forgot to tell you, this film isn't very good. which I love because it's a brilliant film. And I liked the visual craft of I love visual crafts of Denis Villeneuve's work. I think he's phenomenal. I love how he works with actors. He really knows. He's clearly that balance point between technology and performance. He's a really fine person. But bloody hell, I found that film boring. It's just. Yeah,
I didn't, but I think it's great.
Well, you're a Christopher Nolan fan.
Yeah.
Well, do you know what? That brings us neatly onto another remember, which because Alex, you're really good at figuring out what's going to be huge and what's going to be not huge. I mean, this was a fairly obvious one. So this remember is remember when Avatar 2 made £2.5 billion, and I was right all along.
I was right all along. I said this before the film even got released, didn't I? I said the film is going to be, it's going to make 2 billion, it's going to be huge. And everyone said, oh, no, it isn't. The first film is irrelevant. Nobody likes it anymore. And then lo and behold, it did.
Yeah, I said it.
You know, personal feelings aside, I think it's just a massive cinematic spectacle, which people want, you know. Mm-hmm. And last year, particularly after when everyone was reopening after COVID, there weren't really any massive spectacle films. You know, you had Top Gun and a few others. But I think it kind of, yet again, James Cameron kind of hit the nail on the head at just the right time.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's kind of what people wanted at that time. That's one of the reasons why I think it was so successful. Because
you saw it 2.5 billion times.
I probably played a large portion of that box off myself, yeah.
I've not seen it yet. Is it worth seeing?
Alex has seen it for everybody.
Well, if you don't like the first one, you're probably not going to like this one. It's
okay. It was all right.
But I went to the world premiere, actually. That's a great story. I managed to get myself tickets for that through a friend who knows how much of a fan I am. And I was sitting about five rows behind James Cameron and Sigourney Weaver and everyone else. It was such a good experience.
She seems to be such a brilliant person, like very, very normal from all you hear about her. It's just like, it's so cool. Yeah.
She seems to be, you know, who knows what they're really like. But
well, exactly, yeah.
But yeah, she seems to, I think she's fantastic. When you know, she always is. And
our dog's called Ripley, so yeah.
I do have quite a good sense of what films will do well. I'm not obviously not always right.
We've been, Alex, talking in the last couple of weeks about controversial films and whether cinema managers, specifically me, should decide what we do and do not play based on morality. It's sort of come about because of Sound of Freedom, which you and I have spoken a lot about. Did you play that, by the way?
No, we didn't.
I'd just be interested to know your opinion because you're cleverer than me about it. Wow, you get to you pick your films with a programmer, so you have a programmer who does your films.
We have programming teams who essentially tell us what we need to play. You know, there's a little bit of input, but you know, they're the experts, you know, in this. I think to be honest the reason we didn't play Sound of Freedom specifically was because it just didn't fit in with our schedule, and you know, it was apparently quite average, and you know, but we just didn't think that there would be much of an audience for it at our site.
I mean that's genuinely the reason why people aren't playing it, is because it's a fairly rubbish film that isn't as good as the others and isn't going to make as much money as the others. There's no conspiracy going on here.
There's no other reason other than that we just you know, there was no agenda for us not screening that film. Although I just kind of on a tangent of it, in the States when it was released, Sound of Freedom, there was a apparent, I'm not on TikTok, but I heard that on TikTok there was like a running controversy of people going to cinemas and being turned away saying that the aircon was broken, so they couldn't watch the films. And there are people like, they've broken the aircon on purpose. Like, these people not know how difficult it is to maintain aircon in cinemas.
summer.
Genuinely, if there's been one consistent thing throughout my entire career, it's the difficulty of maintaining aircon and the correct temperature in screens. No conspiracy there, I don't think.
That's something we haven't touched enough upon. In fact, is just aircon. We should do a whole episode on aircon, where I just talk about how annoying it is. Yeah.
And you know, in the exact same screen, you get a customer coming out saying it's too hot, and someone coming out saying it's too cold, and trying to manage that.
100%. Anyway, sorry.
For a future episode, I guess.
That sounds great.
In terms of the, I mean, look, I think people should. I mean, I listened last week with the Jeremy Corbyn thing as well, and again, that's it's difficult because the films that are often deemed controversial are ones that won't make much money, right? So the decision is kind of made for people. Yeah. But I think, I think people should have some sort of say, you know, in what they play. And I'm not saying that we should tell people what they can and can't watch, and that option should probably be there. For example, you spoke about How to Blow Up a Pipeline last week, and we played that very successfully, you know, for a number of screenings.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know.
Well, have you ever shown any Adam Curtis work in the cinema at all?
I haven't.
No.
And I don't think we did in Brighton.
Because it's, I mean, a lot of stuff he does is for TV, but it is very cinematic in its approach. It's just that the thing with Adam Curtis is he tends to use longer form films. But yeah.
Yeah,
I think, I mean, it sounds Adam Curtis would be quite a the type of film that the chain that Alex works for would play. But I think you've sort of fallen into a thing that quite a lot of people ask us, which is, why don't you play such and such a thing? Mm-hmm. And it's a television film, or it's a TV show or something. We get a lot of, I'm sure you do as well, Alex, we get a lot of people saying, oh, you could play old Only Fools and Horses episodes and people would love that. And it's like, well, I can't.
Not that easy.
It's
yeah.
not. Yeah, it's just not. Or you should play the final of Strictly this year.
Yeah.
No, I can't just do that.
In the past, we have played things that that people maybe have not agreed with the messages in terms of, you know, political situations that are going on elsewhere in the world and so on.
Did we get picketed once? Am I making that up?
No, it wasn't so much a picket. It was a little mini protest about a screening that we were playing, which had ties to Israel. I think that's
right,
what it was.
That was it. Yeah.
And in that instance, you know, that we obviously played that film because people really wanted to see it, and you know, who were we to say, you know, what people can and can't watch? Really, at the end of the day,
mm-hmm.
as long as there's nothing illegal or as you know, there's nothing dangerous in there in terms of kind of political views and so on. You know, most films, mainstream films, have certain political views in them, you know?
Yeah,
and
massively so.
Yeah. We've talked about 80s films. There's basically every Christmas we're playing films that have got things that have got problematic elements in it.
I'm not sure if I answered the question, but you know, I think there should definitely be some flexibility. And, you know, I as I say, unless there's, you know, real murders in it or, you know, pornography or anything of that nature, then obviously that we wouldn't play that. But anything that's kind of political or maybe slightly controversial, we probably would play. And I think I agree with that as well, actually.
Yeah, same. I think the people that think there's a conspiracy theory around playing certain films underestimate the amount that we just want to make money.
I mean, Sound of Freedom will be on streaming in a few weeks, so they can, you know, if you want to watch it, you can watch it as many times as you want. You know, there's no statement being made by cinemas either playing or not playing it, I think.
I would like to ask a question about, this is possibly the most shallow question I think I've ever asked in my life. Celebrity premieres. Do you have any horror stories about celebrity premieres?
Actually, I personally don't, because I'm fairly new in the role, so I, you know, we do have celebrity premieres, but I've heard stories from others, you know, of some celebrities who perhaps were quite rude to the staff, or you know, insisted on what can I say? Yeah, I can say this isn't and it can't be linked to anybody or anything. So, but you can edit that out. But you know, there was one celebrity who, you know, usually when there's premieres, talent get escorted out of fire escapes or alternative exits and entrances so that they don't, you know, clash with the general public. And there was somebody who insisted, this wasn't someone I dealt with, by the way, this was just I heard from a colleague. There was somebody who insisted that the fire escape be swept before she walked through it. It wasn't even particularly dirty, apparently, but they refused to leave. And they were holding up the whole screen whilst these some poor staff members had to go and sweep and mop these fire escapes so they could leave. So, really? Yeah, so not personally a horror story, but that happened somewhere to somebody. And that, you know, it's kind of annoying.
Now, something else that we talk quite a lot about on this podcast is audiences and whether audiences are getting worse. So, Alex, you've worked in cinemas for a long time. Are audiences getting worse?
I think in general, they're not getting worse. But I think the problem is mobile phones. People have separation anxiety from their mobile phones. when they, you know, I'll be honest, you know, I pick up my phone and look at it as often as I can, just because out of habit. I don't do it at the cinema, of course, but people do that. You know, people have been trained throughout COVID maybe and through streaming to be able to access the internet whenever they want, even when they're in a space watching a film or even at a theatre. I went to a theatre about a month ago and there were people on their phones, you know, just pick. And obviously it's a big bright light, so it lights up a big massive part of the auditorium. So I do think in terms of audience behaviour, I think that is the main thing that's contributing towards it, you know. I said earlier that I went to a premiere, and I've been lucky enough to actually go to a few over the years. And ones that I've been to recently, what they do is they invite a lot of what are called influencers. And these people kind of, you know, these people have made a career out of using their phone and taking pictures and taking videos. And they continue to do that in the screen even whilst the film's on. And there seems to be no repercussion for it, you know. And unfortunately, cinemas and large cinemas don't have ushers on every screen. They don't have people, you know, they check screens occasionally, but they don't have someone in screen at all time like they used to.
Yeah.
And people know this, and people just take out their phones and text and look up actors and everything else, you know, whilst the film's on. And I think that's the main thing at the moment. That's the main issue in cinemas at the moment is phone use.
Have any of the cinemas that you've worked in done those screening, like, I can't remember what they're called. They're not called relaxed screenings. That's something else. But screenings where you can just do whatever the hell you want, basically. Phone screenings. Have you heard? You've come across these. I think we've talked.
No, I've never even heard of that. It's something I wouldn't like us to do.
No, yeah. Me neither. I was sort of thinking about it the other day because it is getting really bad with phones. But I guess the idea around it is that don't come to these other ones. This is for you. Get you all in the one room.
The silent carriage approach.
I think that just encourages behaviour that they're going to take into other screenings, you know?
Yeah, I'm in 2 minds about it.
I think there should be, you know, a no phones. You know, okay, look, everyone's going to have their phone on them. There's absolutely no way of policing that or stopping that. But just don't look at them when there are people around you. And, you know, and if there's an emergency and your phone's ringing, leave the auditorium and answer the call. You know, that's, I think, perfectly acceptable. I don't expect people to turn that. No one's going to actually turn their phone off, you know, during a film.
I do.
Oh, do you really?
I put it on airplane mode. It's like, I just love the fact it's like, okay, this is just me and this dark room and this big screen. And it's just, I love it.
I think people get anxious with, you know, the thought that their phone's off and that they can't have at a moment's whim, just contact anybody that they want to. But so I guess in answer to the question, I think that's the main thing contributing. I think audiences have always been, you know, troublesome. And it also depends where you go actually and what cinema you go to and what the staffing levels are like and all this sort of things. And you're always going to get some disruptions. When I first started my career, when I was a projectionist, I remember this quite clearly. We had to stop a screening because there was a group of people in the screen who were being disruptive and they were just refusing to leave. Manager wasn't getting them to leave. The security couldn't get them to leave. And it was a packed screen. They were right in the middle of a 300-seater auditorium. And in the end, we had to call the police and they had to come and escort them out of the building. So, you know, there's always been disruptions. But I think phones and certainly making it at least seem like it's worse because it's like a different kind of disruption. If that makes sense.
Yeah, or it's a more normalised, it's a more ubiquitous one. So we used to get significant disruption occasionally and now we get minor level disruption frequently.
Yeah.
So
we get a bit vaping as well. That happens occasionally.
Do you?
Yeah.
Does it set the fire alarm off?
Thankfully not. No. but it obviously it's vapor. So if you're sitting behind someone who's vaping, there's you know, steam in front of you.
Oh my God.
But, you know, I think all cinemas do have a no vaping policies. I think they should if they don't. And people do take advantage of that sometimes in the screen. But thankfully, the place that I work is pretty disruption-free most of the time, which is good.
Alistair, shall we wind down?
That's fantastic, Alex. Thank you so much for your time. That's been an absolute joy to talk to you about the end. Hopefully we'll get you back again soon to talk about other different things as well.
Yeah, you're very welcome. I've had a great time and I will happily come back in the future.
Thanks, Alex.
Meantime.
Thank you so much, Alex. That was absolutely brilliant. And I'm sure we'll have you back to talk about more things very soon.
Yeah, I think I need to know Alex's opinion on most things henceforth, because he's very measured and thoughtful about the sort of things that I just go, oh, I don't know.
Ellen, can I ask, do you perchance have another podcast that you'd like to mention at all?
Oh, okay. Yes, I was very grateful to be offered the opportunity by the Kintyre Way to do a podcast about the Kintyre Way. The Kintyre Way is a 100-mile walking and cycling route across, and horse riding, I think, across Kintyre. I mean, it is what it says. It is the Kintyre Way. And it's a beautiful walking route from coast to coast on the peninsula. And they asked me to do a podcast. So Jed, the blind cinema dog, and I went out and we walked the Kintyre Way in smaller sections than the sections that you can do it. And we met people along the way and we chatted to them. And I think it's quite nice, all right, isn't it? The podcast, you've listened to a bit of it. Thank you.
Yeah. It's a really fine podcast. Oh. I need to say broadcast. Sorry, I do apologise.
It's a lovely broadcast. Thanks, mate. Podcast. You also have a lovely other podcast.
I do a podcast called What We Do in the Winter about the lives of the people of Mull, Iona, Ulva, Gomatra, Erid, and very soon Little Colonsay as well, which is quite interesting. Oh. As a new person. Good to speak to. I'm just editing a couple of those at the moment. Just oral histories of people in place. Much less of me in it, and I don't say fuck to baguette once in any of the episodes.
Not even one time.
Might put it in at the end of this one just for a laugh. But
how many people live on Little Colonsay?
Full time, no one, but there's a family that have who've been there, and the daughter of the family, who now is the kind of, I think, the principal person that has the house, she's made her career as a writer inspired by Little Colonsay and the views out from there. But who she is will be revealed another time.
Okay, but you're going to tell me immediately after we stop recording, aren't you?
I may have already told you, and you may already have edited around it. Such is the mystery of podcasting.
We're going too far behind the curtain these days.
Too meta. There's a tiny man behind the curtain.
It's too much pompity. Right. Shall we go away?
Thank you, listener. It's been lovely to spend time with you. And Alex, again, thank you so much. And Ellen as well. It's just been great to catch up. And cheers. See you all soon. Thank you.